In today's show, we're going to be talking about the Denver Nuggets and the Utah Jazz as we head into the Orlando NBA restart. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. And you can find me on Twitter as always at @RedRock_Beeble and on Instagram at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Today, we're going to be looking at the Denver Nuggets and the Utah Jazz. Let's start off with the Denver Nuggets. I'm recording this after the first scrimmage game has occurred, so we'll talk a little bit about that as well. But I think something that is important to note about this Denver team is I don't think that they're overly concerned with seeding, and they'll be happy to be third, fourth, fifth, sixth. It doesn't really matter because no home court advantage, obviously. So they're a team that is undermanned at the moment, as we saw with that scrimmage. So there are going to be some concerns. And anyone playing in any restart fantasy leagues, and even DFS over this time, it's going to be rough because there's going to be weird rotations. There's going to be strange lineups. There's going to be so much strange stuff happening. Let's quickly just touch on the scrimmage where the Nuggets beat the Wizards today, and let's get a few things out of the way. The Nuggets started five power forwards, centers. Nikola Jokic and Jeremy Grant were your guards. Bol Bol was your small forward. And then Paul Millsap and Mason Plumlee were your power forward and center. It's a ridiculous lineup. They were playing against a Wizards team that has nobody. There's Onzes Pacheksnik out there. Jerome Robinson continues to be terrible. He was playing a bunch of minutes. Troy Brown and Shabazz Napier, these are the guys they were playing against. All right, so let's get that out of the way first. It was a nothing game. The Nuggets had one guard on their roster. One guard. No, Ecehomo Jamal Murray. No, Gary Harris.
Nice, Gary!
No Will Barton. No Monty Morris. Just no guards available at all to play. In saying all of that, Bol Bol was super impressive. Blocking tons of shots, pull-up threes, passing the ball. We know he's got this shooting ability. An unbelievable shooter. 50% three-point shooter at Oregon. We know he's going to be a good shooter. We know he's going to block shots. These are never things that were in question. He's got a little bit of passing ability. We do know that. The problem with him is defensively and his absolute lack of strength and positioning problems. I don't think that this all of a sudden means that Bol Bol is going to be getting a ton of minutes, because again, if we're going to go out and Dutch rudder Bol Bol, Troy Daniels scored 22 points. So how excited are we about that performance? And the answer is absolutely not at all, because it's a game that means nothing. Now, when everything is said and done, Jeremy Grant's not going to be playing shooting guard. Nikola Jokic is not going to be playing point guard. Bol Bol is not going to be playing small forward. He's going to have to compete with Grant and Millsap and Jokic and Plumlee and Michael Porter Jr. I think that he will get some minutes at some point during this restart eight games. In the playoffs, I'd be highly skeptical of that, but it was absolutely an impressive performance and it should give us some hope. I think long-term, his position is probably going to be at the four and maybe he can work next to Jokic. But of course, Michael Porter Jr.'s position is going to be at the four as well. He's a four, not a three. Maybe he can work at the three at times. But where does that leave Bol? I don't think you can have him as your center, despite how tall he is. The lack of strength for that position is going to be a real problem for him. I think he's going to be a stretch four, and I think he could work next to Jokic, but fitting it in with a Porter is going to be the question. I don't think we're going to see these 30-plus minutes that we got Bol playing. That's not going to happen through the eight regular season games. So don't get overly excited, despite how impressive it was. Jokic was good out there, but it was just a game that was stupid. It made no sense. There was weird performances. Good to see my man Isaac Bonga again, another really positive contributor. He's not putting up big numbers all the time, but he was positive. Rui Hachimura, the three-point shot looked a little bit better for him on the Wizards side of things, but we are talking Nuggets here. So this is a team that it is really hard to gauge what they're going to do. I think they're going to be really, really easy on Paul Millsap in terms of his minutes. And Grant is going to have to fill in some of that time as well. But overall, we're just going to be looking at a pretty similar team to what we saw most of the season. Jokic is like a first-round restart guy. Murray, let's hope he can get things cracking as well. Will Barton is always inconsistent and up and down. the big thing to watch for Denver is going to be what Gary Harris can do, because we know that he was just way off during the season. His shooting numbers are struggling, 42%. That was really his calling card. He was a shooting guard who could be a 48, 49% field goal guy, and he just hasn't been that for 2 years. Shot 33% from three only this year. Got 1.4 steals, which is really the only thing keeping him even remotely close to standard league relevance. He was 162nd ranked player this year. He needs to really turn things around. Otherwise, I worry about sort of where he fits. Now, defensively, he's been pretty strong, but he just, that lack of shooting from Harris is absolutely a concern for this team when they move forward and what happens here in the bubble. But again, I think it is really important that when, if you are drafting for this upcoming restart, that you don't look at this Bol Bol game and go, well, he is a guy that is going to play like this in the eight games. There's absolutely every chance that he has a game like this at some point. But look at context. Troy Daniels scored 22 points. Nikola Jokic was a starting point guard in this game. The opposition was absolute garbage. Like, just garbage, that team. And no offense to Tom Bryant, who played only 8 minutes, or Bonga, or any of these blokes. That's not an NBA caliber team. That's, you know, realistically, if the Wizards were throwing that team out there every game, they'd be the number one pick team. So while it's encouraging, we do have to temper. In a dynasty league, if you've got Bol Bol, is this the right time to sell high? Because will his stock ever be higher? It depends what your offer is, but it's absolutely worth exploring. But we're trying to focus on what's happening here in the restart. I just don't really see much changing from this rotation. You're going to have Torrey Craig and Porter Jr. sort of fighting for those 13, 15 minutes or so off the bench. I don't think Porter's coming in and playing 25. Malone's talked about it before, and then he backtracks on it really quickly. Jokic, Murray, Barton, Millsap, Harris, Grant, Morris. They're your key guys that are going to get 20-plus. And then it's Plumlee, Porter, and Craig. And then you'll get some games where Bol comes in there. Maybe Daniels comes in occasionally. Bol probably is the 11th man in this rotation. Maybe he can take some of those Torrey Craig minutes away. But remember, there is Porter, there is Plumlee, there is Grant, there is Millsap, and there is Jokic already in the rotation to play the 4 and the 5. And I'm just not sure how much small forward Bol Bol we're going to actually get in when the games start mattering. This was a, wasn't even really a preseason. It's like a preseason game for the preseason, this Nuggets Wizards game. So again, just don't get overly hyped, but super impressive. We know he can block shots. We know he can hit threes. He was taking pull-up threes. He's an unbelievably good scorer. The problem has always been with him off-court stuff, injury concerns, and defensive things. And they are the things absolutely that we do need to pay attention to as it moves forward. We could not get any read on that in this game, which actually is not the most unimportant game that you could possibly see. So that's important to just keep that sort of thing in context when talking about this Denver Nuggets team. In terms of re-rank or restart projections, I think Jokic probably is a top 5 guy that we want to look at. Murray probably close to top 50. Barton top 60. Millsap probably top 100. And then you guys like Harris and Grant and Morris and Porter and Bol. Maybe if you want to take a flyer on them, maybe you do it on Bol, but probably not. Those other guys are going to get more consistent minutes there. They're not. You know, I don't think too much is going to change from this rotation that Malone used, and you'll probably ramp it up the last 4 or so games to get them into playoff form, and you'll really start to see things tighten down. And that might mean someone like Porter is actually out of the rotation entirely. So they're the things that I'm looking for with this Nuggets team. Absolutely love it for Bol to get out there. It felt so bad for him on draft day. I think teams needed to take that flyer on him earlier than they did. He's had some decent G League moments this season. It's just really good to see him out there and playing well, but the real test comes in real games or real-er games than this one to see exactly where he is in his NBA development. But massive stuff to see him out there and firing away and playing as well as he did. Now we're going to talk Utah Jazz. So to talk about the Utah Jazz, I'm going to bring on the host of the Locked On Jazz podcast and the founder of the Locked On Podcast Network, David Locke. David, welcome back to the show.
Josh Lloyd, how have you done it? You've put out amazing content on a regular basis for 5 months without a game, and now you have a game. Like, did you start crying when you finally had games again?
Yeah, it was leading up to it, it's been pretty tough to find stuff, but you know, I've been keeping myself entertained trying to come up with things to do, and we're finally here. We've got scrimmage games, we've got real NBA games kicking off next week, so it's pretty exciting to have basketball back, and let's just hope that it does stick and we do have games all the way through to October.
Should I drop Anthony Davis to pick up Bol Bol?
That's everyone's question is going to be about Bol Bol today. I would say probably not. That was one of the weirdest games that anyone's probably ever seen in terms of lineups for that Nuggets team.
I'm interested in your fantasy take on this. My feeling is this is going to be the best basketball we ever have seen and we will ever see. Very contrary to, I think, what most people think. But you want to hear my thought out on this?
Yeah, go. Let's go.
First off, as someone who travels with the NBA, unless you do it, and I'm not in the bubble, I'm not doing it now. Unless you do it, I don't think you have any understanding how exhausting plane flights are. Just singularly plane flights. So the first fact that nobody's taking a plane flight in this whole stretch, I think is going to increase the level of play at a tremendous amount. Second one, talking to, you know, directors of sports science around the league on all of the scheduling things over the last few years, what they've said to me is the best thing you can do for a player is have them play every other day. When we get 3 and 4 days off, and we often do that in the playoffs, you're actually taking a player from peak performance, dropping them below peak performance, and asking them to return to peak performance, and that's how you get injuries. The third thing is just the lack of distractions. Like, so they're going to be rested. They're going to be at peak performance every day, and they're just going to be there to ball. I think, and then the fourth and final thing is, usually when you hit this stage of the season and you're getting ready for the playoffs, you have 6 months of wear and tear on your body and adrenaline is carrying you. These guys are actually, they have a longer training camp than they have, a longer period here than what training camp is. If you count the 8 seeding games as preseason, that's actually longer than preseason. I think there might be some bad games in the first round because some of the teams aren't going to be all the way there. But when you get Oklahoma City versus Houston or Utah versus Denver or Philadelphia versus, who knows, Boston in the first round, I think those are going to be outstanding. And by the time we hit the final 8 teams, I think it's going to be the best basketball we've ever seen. And I think it's the best basketball we will ever see.
I agree with that when we get to the playoffs. I think the 8 regular season games are going to be pretty rough as teams sort of work their way back in terms of some shooting rust, in terms of weird rotations, in terms of teams that don't really care where they end up in the seedings, in terms of teams that look like the Brooklyn Nets and the Washington Wizards at the moment. That's going to be pretty rough, I think. But I agree with you that once the playoffs kick off, you're going to have really high quality stuff. Because one of the things that we've talked about in the past, you know, James Harden wears down from playing 38 minutes a night. Chris Paul, he's getting injured in the playoffs. Like, if these guys are, if we've got November, December level James Harden play through the playoffs, like, that changes a lot versus the guy that's consistently worn down from having a 40% usage in 38 minutes a night for 80 games during the season. Like, that is a big, big difference. But I reckon that these 8 regular season games might be just a little bit rough. But your Utah Jazz, David, they come in, interestingly here, without one of their starters. Bojan Bogdanović had wrist surgery. He won't play. So the obvious substitution there is Joe Ingles starts. But the question I have for you is, who then takes Ingles' spot in the rotation?
So this is a major issue. Bojan Bogdanović has been playing 31 minutes a night for the Jazz. The guys that are there to replace him in the system, Joe Ingles, Royce O'Neal, those type players, they're already playing 30 minutes a night. You know, Mike Conley is playing 29 minutes a night. Joe Ingles is playing 29. You don't want those guys at a great deal more than that, than you would necessarily. So you're absolutely right. The big question is, how do you replace 31 minutes of Bojan Bogdanović? I think the answer, surprisingly, is Emmanuel Mudiay picks up probably 20 to 25 of those minutes, maybe 20. Jordan Clarkson probably picks up 6 or 7 of those minutes. Royce O'Neal adds 2. Joe Ingles adds 2. Now you've got 31. But that, I think, is it. And that tells you very much of how the Jazz are going to play. You know, I didn't mention George Niang, who's actually the best percentage 3-point shooter on the Jazz. He's only played 2 games all year over 20 minutes. And I'm not sure he's a player that should play more than 20 minutes a night. But he'll probably get close to that, or at least have the first shot at it. So between George Niang adding 6-7 minutes, Emmanuel Mudiay average adding 15 to 16 minutes, and then 3 or 4 just in other places where the Jazz would play a tremendous amount of what I would call 4 guard lineups with Rudy Gobert, is what I think you'll see out of the Jazz.
I agree with that. I think Moutier is, because he was a guy that was out of the rotation once they were healthy. He wasn't playing. He played like 10 minutes combined in their last 10 games. So he was out of the rotation. So I think he's the guy that comes in. Yang gets more minutes, and you know, Clarkson, as you mentioned, O'Neal a little bit extra. But that implies a 9-man rotation, because that's what the Jazz were running in the regular season. I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, in these preseason games, do the Jazz look at them, or not preseason, regular season, which is a preseason, do the Jazz look at them as, hey, we must win all these, we're fighting for seeding, or they like, we want to treat it like a preseason and ramp it up? So there, who comes in? Does Tucker come in and play, you know, 6-7 minutes? Do they go with someone like Oni, or does Brantley come in? Like, are they going to expand that rotation out?
So if there's anyone in there, I actually think it'd be Juwan Morgan is most likely to grab some of those minutes. Because they need another big, and I think he can probably slide in that realm a little bit. I think you're going to see Quinn try some very creative rotations. I think you might see, I heard at practice that they played a little Tony Bradley with Rudy Gobert to try some things.
Yep.
So I think you're going to see all sorts of different lineups and rotations. I was just on a Zoom call with Quinn a moment ago, and he said that I'd like to try rotations, but I think that those rotations will likely be inside of the 9 or 10 men that they usually use. Late in the scrimmage, you'll probably see some things. But he also, Quinn pointed out, like in the first scrimmage, I only got 40 minutes instead of 48. That's actually a big difference. I think the other one you'll see in regards to the 8 seeding games is, with all the stuff that went on with the Jazz, I think there's a real effort here to bring back a level of camaraderie and togetherness out of this group. And so in some ways, I think they'll take large portions of these games very seriously to try to get everybody kind of back on the same page and together again. And as you're mentioning, they're replacing someone who played 31 minutes. So that changes a little bit of who they are, and they better figure that out.
You talked about the issues that there have cropped up over this 4 or 5 months off between Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, and talking about camaraderie. Both of these guys tested positive, of course, for COVID-19. How much of that is overblown? How much of that is a deterioration in their relationship? Because, you know, you can work and play together without being best mates. So how is this an overblown situation?
So hard to answer, because I think there's a lot of nuance to it, and we're not very good at nuance in this country right now, or in just about anything in life. So let's go back to March 11th, which is hard to do, right?
Yep.
We didn't know very much at all about COVID. We'd had our first death in Seattle. You know, I look back at our time. We had been in a road trip in Boston and New York, and you couldn't get cleaning supplies, but we didn't really know what was going on. So when Donovan tested positive, I think there was a great level of concern and panic, right? Did he just lose his chance to a $100 million contract? Is he suddenly like, you know, I think there was just a feeling at the time, without a lot of knowledge, that, you know, maybe that Rudy had given it to him. I don't know that we know that any longer, right? I think that it's transmittable very differently than what we understood at the time. So considering like the knowledge now, I think there's a little bit of a cooling off that's taken place since then. You know, I think that Donovan and Rudy were developing relationship, as any third and fifth year players in the NBA do. And frankly, there aren't a lot of cases in the NBA where two stars rise up together and the relationship holds without a lot of bumps in the road. So as somebody said in one of the articles, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10 on star player, you know, beefs, this was probably a 3, and then there was no sports, so it went to an 8. The other thing I think that's most important just in regards to it is, you know, what is the relationship of these two guys? The relationship is that they play basketball together and that they win games together and that they get to share their brilliance together. Well, for 5.5 months, they didn't get to do that. Or now I guess 4 months, they didn't get to do that. And so when you take away what the premise of a relationship is, I do think it leads to a little strain, particularly under the unknown stress that we had.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough, because there isn't that opportunity to reconcile and go, well, here we are, we're playing basketball, let's focus on what we're doing. Hey, you helped me, I help you. That wasn't there, and it sort of had an ability to sort of simmer and linger over that time frame as well. So I think that is an important point. Now, another player that is really interesting, especially for fantasy people who are looking to have drafts in this little eight-game regular season, Mike Conley was one of the biggest disappointments over the course of the season. He was a top 50 draft pick who finished outside the top 150. His minutes were down, his percentages were down, his assists were down, which was sort of expected in the Utah system. But where are we at with him? Because he had injuries. The shooting was rough, but it did start to come good towards the end of the season. Over his last 20 games, he was back at 46% from the field, shooting 39% from three. So do you think that Mike has shaken off those early adjustment problems? And was it just adjustment issues or was it injuries? Like, where do we take the Mike Conley Utah experience? Do we look at the improvements over the end of the season and think, well, he's ready for a big resumption here?
So there's a bunch of things that I think I would tell you. One is that the word out of the bubble is that he's been terrific, that he's come, and we saw his gym, right? Like when he went up against Tamika Catchings, we got the difference between an NBA star and a WNBA star. So he's in great shape. I think he's been working, and he seems to be kind of at peace of where he is. Secondarily, the word is that maybe the Jazz kind of understand him better. I think there was a feeling when they got him, they were getting a Stockton-esque point guard, and I think in retrospect, he's more of a scoring point guard. To your point, his best game of the year was two games before we all shut down, 25 points, three rebounds, five assists against Boston. I don't have his Toronto numbers because I haven't updated my notes. I actually have to go back and look to see if my notes are updated before the Oklahoma City game, but I had Mike down at 17 of his last 35 from three, plus 39 his last four games. If you'd gone back to since his minute restrictions were cut on February 1st and he was back to full throttle, he was 17 points, four rebounds, five assists at 48% from the field and 46% from three. I think those are the numbers that you would have expected from him. I'm just reading my notes here, which is good because I have to call a game tomorrow. He was 22 of his last 50 on above the break threes. Like, I think he was finding who he was, but you have to understand that this was a crazy change for him. This was the lowest usage rate he'd had in his career since 2012-13. Yeah. Like, that's a crazy change for a player. So I think you had to understand that a little bit.
He went from 28 usage in his last year in Memphis down to under 23 in Utah. And the assist numbers drop. And we saw it with Ricky Rubio last year as well, that point guards in that Jazz system, they don't get those assist opportunities. The ball is spread around more. Joe Ingles passes it. Donovan Mitchell has passing opportunities as well. And it is something that is just going to happen. But you're right, those encouraging numbers at the end. He played 34 minutes in that game against Toronto. He had another seven assists in that one. He only had 13 points because his two-pointer deserted him, only 20% from two in that game. But you're right, the three-point shooting had really kicked off over that little stretch there. The minutes were up. He was getting more assists. He had seven steals in his last three games as well. And I think Conley is a guy that, despite being outside the top 150 over the course of the season, probably is going to push towards top 70, maybe top 60 in this restart scenario, and could be a little bit of a steal for guys who are drafting there just because of the disappointment and the way that players may have felt that he burnt a draft pick with that really disappointing start to the season, but it was improving as the season went on, and that is something to pay attention to. David, anything else that we really need to pay attention to for this Jazz team? Do you think that they are going to care anything about seeding here?
Yeah, I think they might care about seeding a little bit. There's some aspects to where, depending who they play, Rudy's value is increased. I have really mixed feelings on this whole stretch, Josh, from a big picture standpoint. On one end, if I was sitting in another chair other than my own, absolutely, I would talk about how Denver and Utah are the two teams you want to play, right? Like, they've lost home court advantage. They're the two teams with the home court advantage. Utah's lost Bojan Bogdanovic. And, Denver lives on offensive rebounding, and I think that's less possible to get done against good teams than it is against bad teams. And so I think in the playoffs, I think that makes it a little bit more difficult for them to have success. Their offense, they're not a great shooting team, and playoffs usually have to be a good. So those are my two teams that you look at. I think that makes a lot of sense if I made that argument. The only one that I keep kind of coming back to a little bit right now on the Jazz is the reason the Jazz have had three straight years of success and then three of, I think, the last 4 years that they've made it to the second round of the playoffs. It's because of Rudy Gobert, right? Like with Gordon Hayward, they made it. With Donovan Mitchell, they made it. But it was Rudy Gobert in the middle, who just is, I still think, so much more impactful and so much better than the league realizes today. He's not going to win Defensive Player of the Year this year because he touched microphones, which is going to be the stupidest decision. Like, you know, Giannis or somebody else can win. He's the best defensive player in the world. He changes games offensively and defensively dramatically. His impact is still going to be the same. I may turn out to be wrong on this. I think they might be a little better than they're getting played out to be. And again, I just said it. Like, I would agree with that take, and I've had that take. But as I get closer to it, I just am being reminded that Rudy is a one-in-a-million player. I really do believe he's one of the 5 or 10 most impactful players in this league on what he does to a game, and they still have him. And in that sense, they might be a little better than people realize.
Yeah, look, all the advanced metrics will bear that out with Gobert as well. I think he's 8th overall in PIPM. He's got a massive Raptor score as well. All those advanced numbers, really, really love what Gobert does. And he's super impactful in that, all that on-off stuff and all of those advanced numbers. Yeah, irrespective of him scoring 13, 14 points a game, what he does is really important for this team. But I do agree that, you know, that losing Bojan Bogdanović, I think, can be offset a little bit if Mike Conley becomes Mike Conley instead of, you know, half Mike Conley or three quarters Mike Conley that we saw. I think there is a chance that they can step up. But that middle of the Western Conference is super interesting, and we're all going to be watching to see how it all pans out. And David, of course, you'll have it for us all over on Locked On Jazz. Thank you again for coming on Locked On Fantasy Basketball with me.
Serious tip of the hat to you. Your work throughout this stretch has been incredible. Your listener numbers are there, so I know everyone out there that's listening agrees with me. I've been blown away by the work level you've done. You're our all pro. You're our first team all star, and we appreciate you.
Thanks a lot, David. All right, guys, that is it for today. Don't forget to subscribe. That's the word. Subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Give it a thumbs up, leave a comment, and a 5-star review is a great way of helping out the show. Basketball is back in some form. I'm going to be here with you all the way through regular season, playoffs. We're going to have so many podcasts. So don't forget, subscribe, keep up to date, tell your friends, all of that stuff, guys. We are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.